Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Back in the day, you go into a high school parking lot, there was guns hanging in gun racks in the back window, pickups were unlocked. It's very rural.
People would say, what are you studying in college and out in California? And I'd say, agriculture. And they're like, there's agriculture there?
You can judge the size of the pigs, what's in there, by how high the rubs are up and down on the trees. But you also see cut marks in the trees sometimes where those boars are rubbing their teeth.
You know, the last few years before that, we've all been hearing about the droughts and the fires and, you know, everything happening here. So we're seeing a lot less litters.
You don't have to have the best everything. Go cheap, go try it, see if you like it. If you enjoy it, then make the investment. Okay, this is Casey.
And Regina Stafford.
With CICC Outdoor Adventures.
And you're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
You and I and everybody listening to this owns 640 million acres.
I think he killed more deer drinking his coffee, smoking his cigarette in the pickup truck than I did spending all that time freezing my butt off.
Something that I would hope is that people realize that those are wild animals and they have savage natures.
I look forward to packing animals out. I look forward to that pain of success.
Doesn't matter where you were born. It doesn't matter where you live. I've said it before, and you know what? I'll say it again louder for the people in the back. Your present circumstance should not limit your passions.
This is Jay Scott of the Jay Scott Outdoors Podcast.
Hey, this is Ryan Callahan.
Hi, this is Jules McLean.
Hey, everybody. Jason Carter here with Epic Outdoors.
Hey, guys. This is Tim Burnett with Solo Hunter.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
All right, y'all, here we are with another episode of The Wild Initiative coming at you from the ISE show in Sacramento, not Salt Lake City, because I keep saying Salt Lake City.
Do you?
Everyone knows I love to record many, many episodes at Hunt Expo, and so it's my anytime I'm in this crowd, it's my initial reaction to say Salt Lake City. But we are not there. We are far, far away in beautiful California where the weather is actually... Yes. Fantastic today. It's been kind of nasty past
it
two days.
It has been.
Yeah. No, it's nice outside today for the show.
Yeah.
It is
not
lovely,
even as
so.
Chilly. So, yeah.
But I am sitting here with Casey and Regina Stafford of CICC Outdoor Adventures. We are going to have a lovely time sitting here chatting about some California hunting. But I appreciate you guys taking the time sitting down with me.
No problem.
Thank you. Thank you. We love what you're doing and what you represent. So it's cool to sit down and chat with you.
What's the, you're supposed to pull up a line, you know, like, long-time listener, first-time guest, right?
Yeah, it is.
You got. I was very excited when you said that. I always tell people, it's sometimes I, like, still don't believe anybody listens to it. Like, I see the numbers and I see people download it, but then anytime somebody comes up and is like, oh, yeah, you know, I love that episode you did with so-and-so, I'm like, really? Like, you actually listen to that one?
We see that stuff, though, too, like her doing the radio show, I do the radio show, and you think, does anybody even really listen to you? And then people come up and it's like, shake your hand and know your name, and I'm like, whoa, dude.
Oh, yeah. So it's here in California, it's just Sacramento-based, but it has huge listenership. It's just a morning radio show on Saturday mornings on the sports station, AM sports station here in Sacramento. And it's a two-hour, basically like all things hunting and fishing that's happening. And so we've been doing that radio show for our entire years of business, which is like 15, 16 years now. And my segment is actually every Saturday, which is tough. You know, especially if you are hunting or fishing and you have to call into the radio show and give your little tip on hunting or whatever for the day.
I'm here on the side of the mountain.
Yeah,
for sure.
Or in the duck blind. They say all the time, live in the blind.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I've launched a couple of projects this year when I was out in Montana. I was hunting in an area where if I could get on one side of the mountain there,
you had service.
I mean, better service than I had in town. And I launched two or three projects and marketing projects while I was on the side of the mountain from my phone.
That's pretty good office.
I was going to say, I'm not going to complain. You got elk in the glass right here waiting for him to get up in the afternoon and earn an invoice right there.
Absolutely.
Beauty of technology, huh? Yeah.
So one thing I always like to start out with is just a little background on you guys. Introduce yourselves and maybe talk about how did you get introduced to the outdoors and hunting?
Okay, well, my name's Casey, and, you know, as a kid, I hunted with my parents, my dad, my uncles, everybody. The whole family's a big hunting family. You know, and as I got older, it seems like they got busier with work and everything else and siblings, and the hunting kind of and fishing went on the back burner for the family for the most part. I mean, I have some uncles that were diehard hunters, one that moved to Idaho, and I'd go back there and visit with him, but he was diehard. Like, that was his thing, was hunting. He worked all year, and when it came hunting season, he'd just up and quit his job. They'd tell him, hey, I'm out. It's deer season, elk season. I'm gone. So he kind of, you know, burn this in me. He told me once as a kid, he said, you know, you're only going to be able to do this the way you want to do it for so long, so just do it. And we have the family and we have the business that we have to keep going, but we're putting a ton of time in the field because we all love to do it. You know, the kids love to do it. Regina loves to do it. And that's where we spend our time, is hunting or fishing for something. I mean, if we aren't hunting or fishing, we're outside looking for something else to do outside. I mean, we just don't spend time inside. Our kids don't spend time inside. And that's kind of gotten us where we are today, just the love of the outdoors.
No.
We've got some lovely guests here at the ISC show. They're going to listen in on the podcast while they eat their meals. The seating comes at a premium at this spot during lunchtime.
And it's crowded today. So. But, yeah, so Casey grew up right here in the Sacramento Valley. I grew up more on the coastal side, and we met in college. And I think a lot of people think, oh, well, Casey, you know, introduced me to hunting. But I actually have been hunting and fishing myself since I can remember going to my first bear tree when I was 3 years old. I actually have, like, memory of it, or bits of memory, I guess. I mean, for a three-year-old. But he wants the food.
We also have an additional guest here if you want to introduce him, since he does not have a mic on.
No, drag. Casey's little mini dash hound, his wiener dog, is here with us today.
He's a killer. He's not a wiener.
He's a killer, yeah.
He is a wiener. And he's number one.
Yeah. He smells the food, so he's wanting lunch. But, yeah, so, no, I think my love for the outdoors is what I was looking for in a guy, obviously. So when we met, I think that's just how we meshed and ended up. Sometimes I think I'm more of a diehard than he is.
Yeah.
So here's the question. How did you guys meet in college? Because, you know, you think California, you don't initially think, like, oh, I'm going to meet someone that's super into hunting.
Right.
In this end of California, in this Northern California region, hunting is huge. I mean, there's a lot of misconceptions about California. We call California from Sacramento north, the ones that are up here. That bottom half is where the issues are. But it's huge up here. I mean, we grew up doing it. I mean, I can remember as a kid, that's all anybody ever did. Back in the day, you go into a high school parking lot, there was guns hanging in gun racks in the back window, pickups were unlocked. It's very rural, and it's...
And time kids would hunt, you know, hit the duck blind before class in the morning. You know, there was a lot of that. So that's why they were bringing their guns to school. I guess we should explain that.
Well, you know, back in the day, it wasn't like it is now. You know, everybody sees a gun. A lot of people freak out. The gun has become the super bad tool. It's a tool, and it's something, you know, it's our heritage up here. From here north, I mean, every – for the – I would say for the most part, everybody is a hunter or fisherman, or at least has one in their family.
Familiar with it.
It's one of those things, a lot of time when I'll go on a road trip or I'll go to another expo or event or something that's out of state, especially when you're far off and you're hitting like a lot of the southern states, people are like, oh, you're from California, and you've heard it. Like, yeah. I guarantee you, you know, if you're from California, you've gone out of state, you've heard it. And I kind of explained to them, I'm like, honestly, Red Bluff, where I live now, Red Bluff is really not all that different from the town we're in right now. And from a small southern town, the accents might be a little bit different, but we talk about the same things. The people are really pretty similar. It's not all that different. It's when you cruise down south of the Grapevine that you start getting into a little bit of trouble.
Even in the Bay Area now, I think, I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, but we are becoming more and more removed from, mentorship. So, like, a grandpa or grandma in the family that hunts or fish has been an angler. I think we're like three generations removed now. Here in California, where you don't have that connection, I guess, anymore. Mm-hmm. But in Northern California, it's a little different. If you take the whole state, we're a big state. So if you take the whole state and start doing statistics and numbers, then it gets a little skewed. But in college, I think there was a lot of people that were doing all of that. We're both agriculture majors here in Northern California. I mean, it's an ag-based community, you know, and even in college, I traveled a lot, and people would say, what are you studying in college and out in California? And I'd say agriculture, and they're like, there's agriculture there? Yeah, a big part. And that's why the hunting goes hand in hand with the ag fields that are around here. So
I was gonna say, I think California is, I mean, it's almost half of the nation's food. From California.
Rivals, you know, every now and then, but it most of the time it is the number one ag producing state in the country.
It's there's a podcast I was listening to with a guy, Kevin Orthman. We're driving out from Nashville to Minnesota for a hunting trip. He's the president of POMA, the organization I'm part of.
Outdoor
Professional
media?
Outdoor Media Association.
Okay.
And he was like, okay, somebody told me we have to listen to this podcast on the way, and it's called It Could Happen Here, and they were talking about, like, basically what happens if the Civil War happens. And they started talking about, like, how Northern California and Southern California, there would be a big split, and effectively, like, Northern California could cut off the food to the nation. And it was this whole thing. And by the end of the road trip, both of us were wearing tinfoil hats, and it was getting a little freaky. But you're sitting there, and you're like, this all makes way too much sense.
So that's why you moved to Red Bluff.
Exactly. Many, many reasons. But... Anyway, back to the topics of hunting.
I don't think us finding each other was anything abnormal. I think it's just that's how it is here. And, you know, both being studying the same thing.
And that
thing.
Was totally not a leading question at all.
Yeah.
I just love bringing it up. I'm like, there is a huge, it is a very small geographically portion of the state.
Oh, for sure. Yes, it is. It is.
That really brings out what? There's so much amazing hunting opportunity here in California. I mean, you know, two of the things that you're specifically talking about at this expo, I know a lot of people come in from out of state solely for that. They come in for hog hunting. They come in for duck hunting. It's some of the best opportunity in the U.S. for both of those.
Yeah, our area right here, you know, Sacramento North it's world-renowned for the waterfowl hunting. There's people come from everywhere to come through here. The Pacific Flyway, I mean, we are right dead center in the heart of it here. And a lot of people don't know that. I mean, the big-time duck hunter guys that know a lot about duck hunting, they realize what we have here. But it's pretty wild to think in this state and the way this state is perceived by most people in other states that we have that type of hunting here. I mean, it's pretty cool, really. I mean, we're urban, yet an hour away, you can get away from the city and be right back into the wild.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and you have guys who are looking, or gals who are looking for specific, I mean, our elk hunting here too is like, I mean, people have to come here to get specific species of elk to, you know, fulfill these lists that they're trying to accomplish. So, you know, we have Tule elk right here in our backyard, as well as just a little bit up north, we have the beautiful Roosevelt elk, and it's, you know, I mean, that's California. So
there's not many other places, too. I tell people all the time, where we sit, you know, right here in Sacramento, within 2 or 3 hours of us in every direction, you can be at the coast hunting black-tailed deer. You can be in the valley hunting ducks. You can be on the rivers catching salmon, stripers, sturgeon. I mean, go down to the bay another hour or two, and you're into the shark and the halibut. It's just, it's a pretty wide array of opportunity for the outdoorsman here.
Yes.
I feel like it is. You're saying, like, some of the big-time duck hunters know it. And I almost feel like the guys from out of state that know about it, they want to keep it a secret. Like, it's because I know some guys that they every year they come and hunt A zone for early blacktail.
Yeah.
Because they can come in, they can get an extra deer hunt in before any other season's even close to starting.
Yeah.
Same thing about duck hunting, and I feel like some will talk about it, but it's almost like, oh yeah, California, there's no hunting over there, as they're buying their tags,
right.
talking out of one side of their mouth.
And we have, and it's not a roadblock with private land either. I mean, it's not like that type of issue, because there's plenty of public land here that, like he's saying, within all around us, compass around us, you can hit public land. So.
And we have over-the-counter tags where you can't get in other states. I mean, all you got to do is show up here and have a hunting license, walk in. You could buy 2 A-zone tags, 2 B-zone tags, and go hunt. I mean, and you can literally start, like you said earlier, I mean, I think A-zone archery is usually like the second week of July, which is hotter than you know what here, but...
And that is not the coolest area in general.
It's miserable over there. But if you want to go hunt, I mean, there's great opportunities to start in July, and you can hunt here. I think our D-zone season ended like November 2nd or 3rd this year. I mean, that's a big window of opportunity.
Well, and you look at if you're an archery hunter, you look at that archery only tag. How many units and how stinking long can you hunt that tag? You can just you can drive up and down the state and hunt that tag for...
Yeah, you can start in July and you can end in November with that tag, basically.
On one tag.
One tag.
And they're over-the-counter. They're, I mean, effectively unlimited. I think there's technically a number, but...
And the different zones. Yeah, the archery only. But I just... Yeah, I think it's a total misconception that the opportunity doesn't exist here. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're going to hit... We see it as California residents. Obviously, we know how our pocketbooks get hit with non-resident fees when we go out of state hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, likewise, if people are traveling in here. The nice thing with the waterfowl hunting, though, is they don't have to buy a full season hunting license. They can just do, you know, a 2-day license here, which is a lot more affordable for, you know, if you're traveling in. So,
and I'm baffled by that still, that you can buy a 3-day license and come here and hunt ducks, because if you want to hunt pigs, they force you to buy a year-long license, which makes no sense to me, because I think there's as many, if not more, hunters coming in to hunt waterfowl than there is pigs every year from this state's money grab theory. I can't believe they let that fly, but hey.
Well, you're giving it away right now.
And that's one thing, is waterfowl hunting is something I really have been wanting to do. I kind of wanted to start in on it last year, and it just didn't seem to work out. But this year, I'm determined I want to go on my first waterfowl hunt, because, I mean, and Regine, you've been listening to the podcast, so you kind of know, is my whole thing was I kind of got introduced to hunting, and then I got introduced to elk hunting. And I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. The romantic big mountain notion of chasing elk through the mountains with my bow, by myself, camping backcountry free. And I'm still in love with it. I still think it's the most amazing thing on earth. But I focused so much on that. I missed out on so many of the amazing opportunities that you can always be doing for the rest of the year that don't require this huge investment of effort and time. Like duck hunting, and that's something I've really been wanting to do this year, and you know, it's the fun thing. You go out, it's social, you go with your buddies, you have a few beers afterwards, you know, it's that aspect. And so for maybe someone that's looking to get into duck hunting initially, what, you know, how would they go about that?
you know, in California, again, we have so much opportunity with the refuge systems and everything that we have around here. I mean, you can pretty much walk onto a refuge. You're not going to get each refuge has a quota of what they let in there during the day. But I know a lot of guys that bounce from refuge to refuge. They'll go here and put in a number, or go over here, put in, try to get a number to get on a draw to get in early. But if they don't, they just kind of wander around, and they'll go in the afternoon. They'll go in at 10 o'clock when everybody else is coming out. Then they go in and spend the rest of the day in there hunting. So the opportunity is there, and the cost is minimal to get into the refuge, to get in there and basically treat that land like it's your own. You know, go in there and explore and hunt. We personally don't do that. I mean, we're so busy with the guide service running the business. All the waterfowl hunting we're doing is basically private land, rice fields and stuff like that. But there's a ton of opportunity for guys to get out and do it pretty much free. I mean, relatively.
So say, you know, I'm on a budget. I want to get into, I'm like, okay, waterfowl hunting's great. It's fairly inexpensive to do. The opportunity, you know, it's active. It's a lot of stuff tends to happen when you're waterfowl hunting. It's not kind of the, I'm going to be lucky if I see one animal, you know, the entire week I'm here kind of a thing. But say I'm on a budget and I want to get started. What are my basic necessities for waterfowl hunting?
Anywhere you go, you're going to need, I mean, you're going in the water, so you're going to need a pair of waders. And you can buy any, I mean, they're out there all over. You can get as cheap or as expensive as you want on that. I mean, you could go buy a cheap pair of waders. You don't have to have, I mean, I tell people all the time, there's a ton of guys that hunt with us that don't wear camouflage. If you have a brown jacket or a green jacket, good enough. You know, you just need to blend yourself
in. I wear
a
green jacket.
Yeah, she wears the green jacket with the foil inside.
But, it's warm.
You know, a cheap shotgun, it doesn't have to be anything special. A cheap box of shells and go out there and just try to do it. You know, on this public land in these refuges, you don't need 50, 60, 70 decoys. You can do it with four or five decoys.
I tell hunters, too, is like if you do have buddies, that's the way to do it. You know, is kind of make a list of the basics that you need and then split it up. You know, like if it's you're going to invest in a motorized decoy this year, which might be a little bit more expensive. So have him, your buddy or girlfriend or whatever, pitch in with, you know, a half dozen decoys, floater decoys. And then you guys can start building off of, you know, your I mean, not that you can't be a solo hunter. There's plenty of them out there. But I do think that the social aspect that you keep hitting on is one of my favorite parts of duck hunting. It's been a blessing for me to bring my children out there and have that quality time with them in the duck blind. So, you know, I see that. But, yeah, I would say just basics. You know, it is an investment initially if you don't have all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But you can always borrow a shotgun. And you'll hear, like, you know, a lot of people have an old pump shotgun in the back of their safe that they haven't used. So don't feel like you can't ask people for those types of things.
And as far as honestly firearms purchases go, you can't get too much more affordable than a shotgun. You know, you go to most local gun shops. Like, I go up to Discreet Defense all the time, and they have just a row of shotguns. Over-unders, they've got double barrels, breech loaders, they've got pump actions.
And you know, used or on consignment, you know, you can find them pretty easily.
I think I picked up a Mossberg, and it was in a camo pattern even. I mean, not even $300.
Yeah.
Like, out the door, I think I paid probably right around $300. And it's, you know, if you're looking to buy one, it's not a bad way to go. You know, you don't have to invest in a lot of optics.
The most expensive item that you will need, I think, to get started.
Yeah,
obviously.
Starting out there, you get your gun. You can buy a pair of waders. You get a cheap pair of waders. Look at them on sale or whatever. You get one for $75 to $100. The coat you can use, whatever you got. You know, it may not be the most comfortable, but starting out, I tell people that you don't have to have the $500 Sitka jacket or the, you know, $500 waiters, you don't have to have the best everything. Go cheap, go try it, see if you like it. If you enjoy it, then make the investment.
Yeah.
Wait, so you mean to tell me I can possibly be successful if I just have an old Realtree jacket that I picked up from Walmart? I don't need the perfectly correct camo pattern?
I think you can get away with it.
How shocking.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing with waterfowl hunting is your face. You know, make sure that you either have a buff that's covering your, you know, it's almost like turkey hunting where you don't want to be you don't have to be total concealment, but the face is the biggest thing I think that the ducks see. And movement, hold still, learn to hold still. They see it. So
a lot of people have a bad habit of when they're duck hunting and they want to look up at the birds all the time because they want to see them. But as soon as you tip your face up in the sun, it's like a pie plate shining, you
Interesting.
Know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we'll wear like a buff that comes up to, you know, the underneath your nose,
and
pull your hat down low and just kind of look out of the corner of your eye and try to watch the birds that way instead of looking up in awe. I mean, you can watch birds coming at you sometimes. I'll have clients in the blind. And I'll see the birds coming, and all of a sudden they'll do something weird, and I'll look down the blind, and there's one guy like this. You know,
yeah.
Everybody wants to see it, but it just doesn't
face
lend.
Put some paint on. Yeah.
So the other thing I want to talk to you about, just because this is something that I love, and I think is people are like, you can't hunt pigs in California unless they're on your land or you got access to private land. And I feel like pig hunting is another thing that is so accessible for someone that wants to get into hunting, for introducing someone to hunting, because it's inexpensive. I mean, you can, let's just say there's a lot of action when you come across a sounder. There's a lot of them.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah,
there's a lot of them there. And so you're in, and it's typically, you know, it's not, again, it's not an expensive tag.
You can hunt all year on a $25 tag.
Yeah.
I mean.
And you're not. People don't develop quite so many emotional attachments to wild hogs, I feel like.
True.
As some other animals. They feel a lot worse sometimes if it's someone new that's never hunted before.
And we see that a lot with women and kids introducing them to hunting. A lot of the times we'll even suggest, let's make either a turkey or a pig your first hunt, because they're not the most beautiful. And like a tom turkey is kind of a little ugly when you look at them close up, you know? I mean, they got, yeah. So, and same with the pigs, you're right. I mean, that is exactly right. With a beautiful duck and their beautiful feathers, or it can be an emotional roller coaster for a new hunter to know that they killed or harvested something as majestic as a deer, an elk, or, you know, something a little that has a stereotype of a little bit more majestic. I'm not saying discounting those animals at all. I mean, I'll treat all animals the same, but for the most part, I think sometimes it is a little bit easier with an ugly animal, and pigs are not are not pretty.
And here in California, I mean, there is a lot of public land where you have a decent chance, I think, of finding pigs. It's just the guys that are super successful doing it are putting their time in. It's like anything else. If you put your time in, take a piece of ground and learn that piece of ground and the ins and outs of it, you're going to be successful. I mean, I know guys that kill multiple pigs a year on public land, but they've done the time. I mean, you could go out on one hunt and you could walk right out of your pickup, out of the trailhead, and go 100 yards, and there they could be. Chances of that happening are probably slim to none.
Yeah.
But the guys that made the investment have learned the ground and are putting the time in, they're very successful every year. I know guys that kill multiple pigs on public land.
So if I'm wanting to invest some time, you know, because there's a lot of public land here, and what initially, so maybe I'm doing some e-scouting or something, trying to just even figure out where to start. What am I looking for if I'm trying to hunt down some pigs, or even just some spots where that I might want to eventually start digging deeper into?
The way it's gone up here, at least in this northern part of the state, these pigs have gotten smart where they want to go down to the valley. They're going into almond orchards, walnut orchards, rice fields, wheat fields, and that's where they're focusing their feeding on. So I tell guys all the time when they ask me, I say, get on Google or do some e-scouting and find any public ground as close as you can get to the valley floor. I mean, that's a great place to start. If you can find a place within a mile or two of the valley, orchards or cropland, and this piece of public ground has brush patches, has water on it, more than likely, that's where they're coming. I mean, the guys that are hunting them that are very successful, they have found these spots. They're getting up high above the valley and watching down as, you know, they're up high in the dark still, set up and ready. And you can watch the pigs come right out of the valley, out of the wheat fields, out of the orchards, and work their way up a lot of times into that public ground to bed. They don't necessarily spend a lot of time feeding there, but they will bed in that, and they will work their way back down and back up every day to get some food.
So what kind of, I mean, I guess, what is bedding behavior for hogs? Like, what time of day do they generally bed? When are they typically moving?
Typically, from what I've seen, for the first hour to hour and a half in the morning, they're out and about cruising. You know, they'll feed. If they're out in an open valley, as the sun comes up, I've seen it a million times, they're out there just feeding in an open valley, and that sun starts to peek up and the sun rays start to hit them, they will run straight for the trees. But as soon as they get back in the shade and it's dark, they'll settle back down and keep feeding, keep rooting around in there. But it seems to me like you got an hour, hour and a half in the morning on a typical day. In the evening, it seems like a lot of times you have less time. They'll wait, and like it's the last 30, 40 minutes where they're actually out moving around. Not to say that during the day, you know, a lot of places they bed, they'll bed in real thick brush that's surrounded by oaks or something. And they'll get up in the middle of the day. They're like people. They get tired of laying there. They'll get up, stretch around, wander around, feed a little bit, and then bed back down.
Or hit reservoirs. We've seen them, okay. You know, if you're watching trail camera patterns or whatever, where they'll get up midday, 2 o'clock-ish, and just go and play in the mud, you know, around the edge of a reservoir, and then head back and into the cool once they have the mud that's cooling them down.
I was going to say, isn't it true that pigs don't, I guess they don't sweat, they don't regulate their body temperature in the same way, and that's why they, you just won't typically catch them in, like, sunning at all, unless they got water.
They don't sweat at all. So to cool off, they have to lay down in the water or the mud. And so that's what I tell guys a lot of times, going into a new area, and I'm the same way. If we get a lease on a ranch or permission to hunt a different piece of property, I spend a lot of time in the summer looking, because a pig is going to go back and forth to water at least twice, sometimes 3 times a day when it's hot. The hotter it is, the more water they got to have. And so I'll spend a lot of time looking around in the middle of the day. It could be 110 degrees, and I'll watch a water hole, and you'll watch those pigs come right down to it. Now, that may not be when you want to shoot them, because it's 110 degrees, and you're going to have to get that meat out of there and try to cool it off.
Yeah.
But you can see them actively using the water as it gets warmer. This time of year, there's water everywhere, there's feed everywhere, and it's just tough to pattern them. But in the summertime, as the water holes dry up, if you know, I'll get up on top and look, like, you look at Google Earth, say you have 7 or 8 different water holes on a certain piece of property, we'll go look at them in June, and you can see which ones, I mean, some are drying up, some have a little water, and some are definitely spring fed or whatever, where there's going to be water there year round. That is where I focus, and during the heat.
So, I mean, really, they're like any animal. I mean, you look at any animal, you read any, like, how to hunt book, and the first thing they're going to tell you when you're locating animals is you look for that trifecta. Like you said, you look for bedding, you look for food source, and you look for water. And so, I mean, with the pigs, and they're bedding in brushy areas, you said, right?
Yes, sir.
Typically surrounded by oaks.
Yep.
Feeding, you're looking for that valley floor where they're going to have orchards, they're going to have fields, right? They tend to go for the easy food like that, or
it's food and the attractor in the orchards, or even through like the Napa area and like our coastal ranges now are the vineyards where there's man-made water source of irrigation.
Okay,
so that's what I don't necessarily. I mean, yeah, they're destroying and eating, you know, like the grass and the little shoots that are coming up in those irrigated areas, but it's the irrigation lines that they like too, and that
interesting.
They're destroying.
Yeah. So I would have assumed right off, like, oh yeah, they're in there because they're the food source is plentiful,
fruit,
and that they're rooting it up.
But
and they'll go right to a drip system in an orchard where it's on top of the ground, and they'll buzz. They're smart. I mean, they can hear the water running in the drip system, and then a lot of times they'll just bust the line. They'll bust the PVC knuckle off, and so you got water going everywhere. And then you come back the next day, and there's a huge wallow in the middle of this orchard.
Yeah. So that's, I think, what has kind of forced them to come down, especially, you know, I mean, like the last year was a better rain year here in California, mm-hmm. but we, you know, the last few years before that, we've all been hearing about the droughts and the fires and, you know, everything happening here. And that's what's really kind of changed the dynamic, not only the dynamic of their pattern, you know, their everyday patterns of what they're doing activity wise, but even their breeding. We've seen a lot of difference with how they're having litters or not having litters at all, because it's become like a survival type thing where they know that there isn't enough resources for their habitat to have successful litters. So mm-hmm. we're seeing a lot less litters, and or if they are, they're really brushed up. You know, you don't see, we used to see tons of sows with lots of litters running around, and now we don't see that as often because they're either really brushed up when they are during their breeding or, you know, having their herds or babies.
I think, too, that during, like, this drought, you know, we had three pretty bad years of drought. Everything confines itself. Everything's got to go to where the water is. So in return, you got all the predators go to the same place. And so they're picking off the piglets. Where you see a litter of eight or nine are born, you see that same sow 6 months later, 4 months later, and she's now running with two piglets.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting picked off. But
it
seems to me,
we have a lot of predators here in California. We all talk about that all the time and the way we're able to manage it. So...
and we're just getting more predators now.
Yeah.
Super excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, they've got a lot working against them, just like anything else does, but they're fruitful. I mean, when everything is right, the conditions are right, they'll have two litters in a year, and they may be 6 to 9 to 10 piglets, and when they all survive, I mean, you get a boom in the population. I think the numbers on the pigs are down right now. But these last two wet winters and wet springs, I think we're going to see them start to come back up. I mean, there's getting to be, from what I see out there, it seems like there's more sows with better sized litters running around right now. So
say, you know, I find this area, I kind of find a promising spot. I dig in a little bit deeper. I'm like, okay, I've got the food feed, I've got the bedding, I've got the water. What sign should I be looking for then as I'm, you know, maybe scouting this area, or even if I'm just maybe out for deer or something and I'm keeping an eye open to look for pig?
A lot of times on a new piece of property that I go to, like I said, you know, I'll focus on the water holes. But the one thing a pig always does is they'll roll in the mud, and as they head back to where, I shouldn't say maybe back, but as they head on to where they're going, they're constantly rubbing against the trees and leaving you a sign of which direction they're going. So a lot of times you can walk, you'll see the trail where they've gone, follow that trail and see where they've been rubbing on the trees, and a lot of times that will lead you in the direction of maybe their bedding area or their food source, whichever, because they're going to go from bed, usually from bed to water to feed to water back to bed during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've found by following that, a lot of times I can figure out where they're going to feed, where they're going to bed. I do not like ever to disturb them in a bedding area if I can keep from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times on these places we hunt, we'll find the bedding area, and they will continue to use that same bedding area until something changes. Maybe a water hole is going to dry up, and so they need to go somewhere different, you know, 2 miles, 3 miles away on the ranch, pick a new bedding area so they're closer to water. But a lot of times if you can catch pigs leaving their bedding area and going to water, going to food, I try to intercept them somewhere in between, set up and bushwhack them there. And a lot of times it won't disrupt them too much. Yes, when the gunshot goes off or you stick one with the arrow, they're going to explode. They're going to go different directions. But a lot of times that won't really break their habit. So they'll go back and use the same bedding area. So once you've found them, you may be able to pick off a couple there over a short time frame.
That's one thing I've had a lot of people tell me about animals in general is you can bump them just about anywhere and they may run off, but they'll come back the next day. Unless you bump them out of their bedding area, and then, you know, unless another group picks it up, they probably won't ever come back there.
Yeah, and pigs are really bad about that. Like, I've had places where I've accidentally stumbling around looking and kicked them out of their bed, and I thought, okay, you know, maybe we didn't bother them much. And you go back and keep looking there, and you won't see that herd of pigs there again for a long time. I mean, sometimes it could be a fluke and they're going to come right back, or another group is going to move in there and pick up that betting area. But like you said, if you bump them a lot of times, you're not going to see them there again for months, if ever, if they come back.
So when you say you're looking for where they're rubbing on trees, are you looking at maybe more looking for like mud and hair? I mean, I'm assuming it's probably not like looking for a deer rub where it's, you know, stripped clean or anything.
Yeah, what you're going to see is on the side of the oaks, you'll see mud and you'll see hair in there. And the other thing you can see by looking at it, as long as, for whatever reason, the boars like to rub their teeth on the trees.
Oh, interesting.
So a lot of times you can look at a tree and you'll see the mud with the hair stuck in it. Of course, that's black grizzly pig hair. But then you're also, you know, up higher, you can judge the size of the pigs, what's in there, by how high the rubs are up and down on the trees. But you also see cut marks in the trees sometimes where those boars are rubbing their teeth. And that just gives you an idea, hey, there's a good-sized boar in here if that's what you're looking for. I mean, some guys are out looking to get a big trophy boar, and that just gives you an idea that, yeah, there's one here somewhere.
That's awesome, because I feel like, you know, there's not a lot of – when it comes to pig hunting, like I said before, there – I feel like it's one of those things where you tend to just reach out to private landowners, to ranchers, to farmers, stuff like that, or you're going on a guided hunt. You just don't really find a lot of information on, for a guy like me that just wants to maybe try and track down some pigs, unless I get lucky, I wouldn't have even known where to start. So I really appreciate you sharing all that. And it's great information for someone that, you know, or even someone, like I said, that's out deer hunting, that notices something there and
what
now understands
that? Yeah.
How to look a little bit deeper, may start recognizing a few things on their hunts and can expand their hunting from, you know, August and September all through the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And
or to even just grab a pig tag while you are deer hunting to keep in your pocket in case you do see something.
And it's
also,
go ahead. It's a great way to learn your deer hunting area as well. I mean, most of the places of public land that have the deer, they have the pigs too. So you're out there stomping around pig hunting, yet you're scouting for deer. Or you're hunting deer, yet you're scouting for pigs. I mean, it
goes hand in hand.
Goes hand in hand, yeah.
We also have a cool program here in California called the SHARE program that allows, it's basically the Department of Fish and Wildlife has linked to private landowners to gain access for the public to hunt it. So I always recommend people looking that program up. It's SHARE. It's like a shared habitat kind of network. And obviously it's an incentive for landowners to allow public access to their properties. But there's a lot of good opportunities for pig hunting in the SHARE program, as well as, you know, like these different wildlife areas are opening up more and more opportunities and having draws in place for people to, you know, put in for them, just like you're going to put in for your duck hunt. You know, it's just this the same type of system that's in place to put in for these special pig hunts that are out there on some of our wildlife areas. So like Grizzly Wildlife Area, they just opened one for Joyce Island recently. I mean, so you see more. I think Lake Sonoma does one over on that side. And I mean, there's just more and more opportunities opening up. And our Fish and Wildlife website, you know, just wildlife.ca.gov is the best way to just, you know, be in touch with some of this stuff that's going on here. So, yeah.
So if you had to sum it up and you're talking to someone from out of state and they're like, and they just ask you like, all right, what is it like hunting in California? How would you sum it up for them?
It's a melting pot of all kinds of opportunities is how I would sum it up. I mean, we get frustrated with laws and regulations and taxes and all the stuff that we're burdened with here. But at the end of the day, when we are like looking to move or move our family, I'm like, man, we just have so much here that we would have to give up and sacrifice. I mean, we're hunting and fishing year round, and that's a blessing. So
the state really, unfortunately, the way it's going, it kind of deters a lot of people, but it really is. I mean, it's a sportsman's paradise. If you want to hunt big game, you want to fish, you want to hunt waterfowl, everything, we have everything here short of just a couple animals. I mean, and yes, we can't hunt the bobcat and the mountain lion, and everything's kind of got its hands tied, but the opportunity's here if you want to put the effort into it, for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
So I want to give you guys a chance to talk a little bit about CICC. Just give your little your promo. Tell everyone about the company.
Yeah, so we run a guide service based out of Colusa, California. We have our hands in a little bit of everything. I mean, we rent seasonal waterfowl blinds. We do guided waterfowl hunts. We do a lot of turkey hunting, guided pig hunting, fishing on the river, salmon, striper, sturgeon. Pretty much we chase whatever legally can be chased year-round. I mean, that's basically what we do. All in all, I think we have around 15,000 acres tied up in the valley for waterfowl hunting. And, you know, some of that stuff is waterfowl and turkey, stuff like that, too. And then we also have a ranch up in the hills where we own almost 10,000 acres. So we have a lot of ground to run around on.
Yeah, and manage.
And manage, yes.
Which I think is a huge component. I mean, obviously the guide service is where we're putting, you know, faces out there in the field and with our clientele. But in our off time, we're doing a lot of habitat work. I think that's what we spend the majority of our time doing is habitat work, whether it's wetland, you know, restoring wetlands or even our foothill, you know, ranches are involved in like reintroduction of the elk herd and elk habitat on those properties. So I think that is what our background really is land management. But, you know, why not put some people out in the field and do some hunting and angling on the rivers when in the spare time, and so when there is spare time, I guess. But it's funny, I always tell everyone, when Casey and I first met, he told me he was a fishing guide, and I was like, a fishing guide? I mean, what is that? and I'm an outdoor, you know, I grew up around all this stuff, and he tells me he's a fishing guide, and I'm like, I don't understand a fishing guide. And so he explains, like, I take people out on the river fishing for money. And I'm like, why would anyone pay you to do that?
A lot of faith she had in me, huh?
Yeah, so anyways, I end up looking it up on the Fish and Wildlife website. And yeah, he was a licensed guide. I'm like, wow, I never knew people could make
a
living
thing,
doing
huh?
that. Yeah. So, and here I am now, 15 years in the business with him. And, you know, I think... And Casey first told me he was, like, wanting to do this full-time. I thought he was nuts, and we didn't go to college for that, and our degrees are not in that. But I was willing to take the leap with him, and here we are 15 years later still doing it. And it's full-time, and both of us are employed doing it, you know. So it's fun. It's neat. And now our kids are coming up in the ranks. We have a 15-year-old son and a almost 14-year-old daughter. So yeah, I mean, we're busy with them, and they love it, and it's been fun to show them how, and we're lucky that they want mm-hmm. to do it. So yeah, we're busy with, whether it's our clients or on our own spare time, hunting and fishing, going out of state and doing the same thing. So yeah.
Okay. All right, so say somebody came up to you, maybe somebody that saw your shirt, they asked you what it was, you're like, wow, you know, I always thought hunting was interesting, you know, but there's so much to learn. I don't know if that's something I can do. I've always wanted to, but it's kind of intimidating. What advice would you give that person? What words of wisdom or encouragement would you give them if they wanted to get into it, but maybe felt a little intimidated by everything?
It seems like there's a lot of that, and there's a lot of people that didn't grow up hunting and fishing, and it kind of scares them, the thought of all of it. But I just say take baby steps, you know, pick something that's a easy hunt or trip to start with and just kind of ease your way into it. But I tell people all the time, you know, there's a guy came up the booth here this morning, and he says, oh, I've never really duck hunted. I've always hunted doves, but I've kind of always wanted to duck hunt, and I kind of want to try it. And I told him, come out and try a guided trip, you know, come out and see how we do it. See if you like it before you make the investment to get into it. But I warned him, I said, if you do it and you're there the right day and see what happens, I said, it's a sickness. You know, you're going to become a duck hunter. And the same goes with deer hunting, pig hunting. I mean, I love to hunt everything. And it's just, you just got to dive in and pick something and start and just be willing and open to try it all, I guess.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, we're lucky here in California. I mean, our, especially with our guide service, what we offer has always been, I think, in the big picture, a more affordable way to approach hunting or fishing. You know, if you do want to try, I think the misconception a lot of times is like a guided hunt is a huge investment. So that's why you have to do it on your own. But for a newcomer, especially, I think if you find the right outfitter and the right guide service to take you, you can learn so much that it saves you so much time in the long run from somebody who, you know, is willing to teach you while you're sitting in the blind and, you know, like, this is what we don't do or this is what you should do. You're learning from an expert. And, you know, like, our services are, you know, anywhere from $250 a day, you know, for a half day in the blind in the morning with our guides. And all of the guides that work for us in our company are specifically, you know, recruited to our business to know that we are there to help newcomers. If there is a new person or if a guy wants to pay for it and bring his wife just to show her what, you know, it's about, we're so more than willing to teach and share. And there's a lot of outfitters out there who are very similar to our mindset too. So don't be afraid of approaching a guide service and booking those trips, because you might, even in the end, you know, hunting is hunting here. We're not a fenced hunt outfit or anything, so it's, you know, you're still out there hunting animals. I wish it was easier some days, success wise, but you're learning so much that it's worth it. And for somebody just starting, I think sometimes that's the way to go, you know.
So if folks wanted to find you guys online, follow along, check out everything, where can they check you out?
Yeah, you can find us on the web at hunt-fish-game.com is our website, or you can find us on Instagram and Facebook.
Just CICC Outdoor Adventures. And that's another thing I guess I should mention is maybe like a couple, well now, 12 years ago, Casey and I were chugging along doing our own thing, and we had an Indian tribe actually approach us and want to partner with us and buy out kind of our business. And so we work in partnership with an Indian tribe here on some of their land, and that's where the CICC Outdoor Adventures comes in. So it's Calusa Indian Community is what that is, and they're a great resource, they're a great tribe. We work with them on accommodations. They have a gaming casino here in Northern California, so beautiful resort that you can stay at and come in at the end of your hunt and really relax and have fun and good food and all that kind of stuff. So CICC Outdoor Adventures on Facebook and Instagram and on the web at hunt-fish-game.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time to sit down. I'm glad that your longtime listener were able to hop on. That's so exciting.
It's but awesome.
I appreciate y'all's time.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
All right, y'all, that'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Make sure you check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com. Get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. Well, that'll do it for this week. I hope this episode inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. And head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.
Awesome.
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery, Waypoint TV.